Welcome to the podcast of Casper Faith Assembly. This podcast is presented in the context of our Sunday morning service. We hope you enjoy this presentation.
I remember as a young boy back in Sunday school class, back in the old church, one of those little classrooms off in the back hallway, Sister Crow teaching Sunday school, and the little flannel graph, the high-tech stuff that I don't always remember all the stories, but what I set years later, as I grew up, God called me into ministry and came back and served here at the church down on Poplar Street as associate pastor with youth and music, and sat in that same classroom. That was my office, and sat there sometimes and reminisced. It's amazing the path that God brings us on from time to time. You don't know the changes that will take place in your life, and you don't know what you're investing in. Sometimes teachers, I want to tell you, Sunday school teachers, pastors, associate pastors, youth leaders, keep preaching and teaching and investing in people's lives because it makes a difference. It makes a difference. Thank you, Pastor Craig, for giving me the opportunity to be here. And are you guys nervous? Okay, because I am a little bit. So something about being home, I guess. You know, it's been, I told you 30 years. It's been 29 years since I preached here, so I've got a lot to say and a short time to say it. But we'll not reminisce too much or we won't get done here. There's a ministry that was established in 1941 that has impacted the spiritual lives of literally thousands of people over 75-plus years, several generations. And over the years, they developed a large campus with multiple facilities that depended upon the generosity and support of its people to continue its vital work. They were always, as with many ministries, always facing serious budget shortfalls. And then in 2010, one of the buildings was caught on fire and was taken out of service because of a fire. Then just shortly after, a year later, a windstorm came through and severely damaged the roofs on several of the buildings and set some things back. And then just a year later, one of the buildings, the second floor, the water line broke loose and flooded down through the building and down through the ceiling and kitchen and office and destroying equipment and tiles and floors and carpet and some equipment and office equipment. The amount of destruction, it took that building out of service for some time, but the amount of destruction that took place, coupled with the ongoing demands of ministry and proceeding with ministry, was overwhelming to the staff. And across our nation, we have churches and ministries that face these same struggles every day. We've seen this multiplied recently over these last few months with the hurricanes in Texas and Florida, the fires in California, as church facilities and parsonages are damaged or destroyed. And even when insurance is available to build and rebuild, and when the funds are there to recover, and the rebuilding is still a long and a stressful process, there's a hustle and a bustle that takes place while ministry needs to continue, and yet the rebuilding of the walls needs to take place. These same stresses are just as real for a church plant, a new church that's wanting to start up, a startup ministry or church that needs to expand or increase its facilities. The needs that are there to continue to grow and minister to people while a building project goes on. Ephesians chapter 2, verse 10 says, "We are God's workmanship created for good works in Christ Jesus, which He has prepared in advance for us to do." And as U.S. MAPS missionaries, my wife Libby and I want Libby, just if you would just stand up quickly, my dear wife, some of you know her, but I cannot do what I'm doing without her help and support and encouragement. And she has always been there for me to encourage me and urge me on. We, as U.S. missionaries, will come alongside ministries such as these that have experienced devastation, perhaps are looking to expand and the troubled waters of that, and help them with some hands-on support to build, to remodel, to repair. And I believe that these are some of the good works that God has prepared in advance for us to do, for my wife and I. Have you ever had one of those jobs where two hands just isn't enough? You need a third hand. And sometimes a third hand isn't enough. But I want you to think of U.S. Maps as that third hand of ministry, that extra hand that helps you get the job done that you need to get done. And with the U.S. Maps, there's three areas, there's three hands of U.S. Maps that I'd like to just talk about briefly. And Pastor, you did a great job of describing what U.S. Maps and RV Maps is about. The church teams is part of it. One of the first hands of U.S. Maps is church teams. And that's where a church, even such as yours or other churches, can get a group of people together to go for an extended weekend, maybe a short week, to go and help another church out with a project or an evangelism or an outreach of some sort. These are church teams, and this is a short-term commitment. Then there's the missionary associates, and missionary associates are those who will commit a longer season of their life to come and help. Oftentimes it's our young people that want to go and spend a summer season somewhere or a year before they go to college to help. And oftentimes they're helping with youth ministries or just administrative tasks. These are our missionary associates, and they're the second hand of U.S. Maps. Then the third hand is the RVers. And perhaps this is one that you're a little more familiar with, but these are men and women and couples from a variety of backgrounds, of abilities and skills and vocational backgrounds. And many of them are at or near retirement age, but I want to guarantee that they are far from retired because they want to do something. They want to do something meaningful and purposeful. And they serve up to serve a few weeks at a time, perhaps up to a month or several months on a project. We ask that our RVers, if you can just commit 2 weeks out of the year, you can serve as an RV or be an active RVer if you will commit 2 weeks to serve on one of our U.S. Maps projects, and you could get you signed up for that. We would love to do that. They serve, some of them, we have several of them that serve year-round, that are in their RVs. They live in their, they've sold their homes, they've sold out, and they're living in their RVs, and they're traveling across the United States helping to build churches across the United States. They'll be south, and they're south this time of year, and it's still cold down there. We've had a tremendous winter this year, but many of them are there in Texas and Florida helping to rebuild churches and helping with restoration. We have over 1,000 RVers at this time and about 100 projects a year that we are working on. We save our ministries multiple billions of dollars in labor costs every year, and there is work for 1,000 more. While this ministry that my wife and I will be in may take us anywhere across the United States, our focus is in the North Central region. We are looking to be missionaries in the North Central region, which is Nebraska, North and South Dakota, and Minnesota, Wisconsin, Upper Michigan, Iowa, and Northern Missouri. But I guarantee if there's a project in Wyoming that I can tag on to at some point, I want to be a part of that as well. But during these years, the RVers, as they're traveling, they put their shoulder to the task, and they come and they offer their skills and their talents. And this campground that I began to tell you about, this ministry that the multiple facilities that they had, the campground, they experienced such a tremendous loss, and RVers showed up, and they came and helped to rebuild and to restore and upgrade and restore much of the buildings. Insurance proceeds funded much of the work, but with the RVers and volunteers and church teams from across the state, those facilities were improved and upgraded and restored. RV Maps and church teams and U.S. Missionary Associates are repeating the story across America. They're offering that helping hand, building buildings, but also they are bringing hope and encouragement, ministry at the sites where they're at. Local ministries are strengthened. And folks, I want to tell you, I know that we worry about our states. We worry about our nation and what's happening in our nation. I want to let you know that the same answer is still the same answer. Jesus is still the answer. And I believe that the hope for America still is connected to the local church. And as we build the churches and as we strengthen the local churches and strengthen the local ministries, we have the opportunity to reach out into these communities and to reach people and to help restore a nation. We want to invite you to partner with us, with U.S. Maps, to build churches and to change lives. Perhaps you can give 2 weeks a year. Perhaps you could give a summer or a summer season or a full year or maybe the rest of your life. But if you're interested in being a missionary associate, a RVer, or we're putting together church team, we would love to visit with you about that. We have been called, my wife and I, to to serve as U.S. MAPS missionaries full-time in building churches and changing lives. And for us to go, we need individuals and we need churches to partner with us to raise our monthly support, to our monthly budget. And we're currently between 15 and 20% of that monthly budget. And we are hoping by Thanksgiving time that we'll have 100% of it raised. That's our goal. And we would invite you to be a part of that. Back on the table, we have some cards, and on one side, you can fill it out. If you're interested in our newsletter, we would invite you to fill that out and leave it with us there at the table. On the other side is some information if you want to pick up an extra card about how you can support us and how you can be involved in giving. And we pray that you can pray for us, and as God enables you to do so, support us. The reason I speak so highly about RV MAPS and the U.S. MAPS ministry is because during those years, that campground that I told you about, that ministry that experienced the devastation, the fire and the windstorms and the flood was our Nebraska District Assemblies of God campground. And during those years, I was the campground director. And I guarantee that it was overwhelming because when these things happen a week ahead of camp season, you're scrambling already to get ready for camp. There was something that took place, though, and when we had RVers come, and some of them were coming for other projects, but I know when I saw those RVers pull into the campground, it was as if it was Jesus himself stepping into my boat and calming the storm, because that's what it was. It was a storm. It was a tremendous time, and I saw those people come. I saw the volunteers teams come, and they brought a calmness and a stillness to the storm that was there in our lives. Imagine what could happen if our local churches are strengthened and encouraged and built through the help of volunteers such as church teams and U.S. MAPS. And that's what my wife and I want to do. We want to step out of our boat and out of our comfort zone and into the boats of others and help to calm the storms at their sea and to bring help and hope to them. I have a video I want to show you, and then I'll share together in God's Word with you.
Retirement. Where is that road taking you? Consider traveling with a purpose. For years, RV volunteers have traveled with a purpose. Many talents coming together to build churches and expand the kingdom. We create meeting places where children learn about God and adults know Him more deeply. Places where redemption and reconciliation are found. We build churches to change lives.
In Psalm chapter 133, verse 1 and verse 3, it says how good and pleasant it is for brothers to dwell together in unity. It goes on to say, for it's there that the anointing and the blessing of God rests. How good and pleasant it is for brothers to dwell together in unity. I go back to my teenage years after we grew up, after we left Casper here for a while, went to Alliance, Nebraska. And I graduated from Alliance, but while we were there in Alliance, we built a church building there, and Dad was the contractor that oversaw the church building there in Alliance, and it was built over the course of several years with volunteer help, mostly volunteer help, and I had the opportunity as a young person to spend a lot of time doing everything that needed to happen in building a church. And I remember being up on the roof of that church and laying shingles. Those three-tab shingles, and how many of you know there's the right way to do things and the wrong way? There's the right way to do, and there's also the easy way to do things and the hard way to do things. And no disrespect here, but if it's the right way and the hard way, that was Dad's way. And is that right, Dale? Yeah. we laid out those three-tab shingles, and the air guns were kind of a new thing on the scene about that time. They had coil nailers that you could nail shingles with a coil nailer and make things a little bit easier, but Dad insisted that they didn't set the nails right, and he just wasn't comfortable with them, so we nailed by hand. Everything was nailed by hand. We didn't use those air nailers because we weren't too sure about that, but we got up there on the roof, and we were shingling and laying out these three-tab shingles. And I paired up with Brother Henderson. Brother Henderson was a dear old man. Brother Henderson moved a little slower than all of us, but he was faithful to the work of God. And he drove one of those old pickups. I don't know what it was, maybe a 47, 49, 53, one of those old Ford pickups with the sides on it and the rack, the wood rack on the, and the best way I can describe, if you've seen Sanford and Son, he was kind of the Sanford guy, and that was his pickup. If you can picture Brother Henderson, bib coveralls and all, but a man who wanted to help God's work, and he was up there shingling, and he was working together with me, and he'd line up the shingles, and I'd nail across them, and he'd make one end right, and I'd get the other end, and we'd nail it across, and we were going along. We were team shingle. We were making it happen, nailing those down, and just hammered down. And I got pretty good at nailing. I got pretty good at hammering shingle nails. They're just short, you know, inch and a quarter, whatever they are, and you could kind of tap them to get them started, and then smack them. And a lot of times with one hit, you could get them in. Sometimes two. Dad said I drove nails like lightning. Never hit the same place twice, right? Yeah. But, I did. Once in a while, I got lucky and hit the same place. But Brother Henderson, as we were going along there, he decided that we could move a little faster if he could hold a nail out on this end for me. So he started holding nails out on this end of the shingle, and I'd nail, you know, I'd reach over and I'd tap that one and nail across and finish nailing. And we were going along really great. And, I mean, it was getting faster and faster. And all of a sudden, I smacked his thumb. Not with the hard blow, just the tap, right? Still turned his thumb black. But what occurred to me, what looking back at it on years, Brother Henderson didn't yell at me. He didn't walk off the job site. He didn't leave. He kept working with me. Yeah, he shook it off, and it got sore, and it got. You know, he lost his nail over it, but you know, he talk about nail painting. Yeah, I hit the nail right on the thumb with him, but he got back and he continued to work with me. And I go back to that and say how good and pleasant it is for brothers to dwell together in unity. You know, when you work together with people, whether it's on the job site or in the church, sometimes you get your thumb smacked. And what's even worse is that sometimes you smack somebody else's thumb. And you don't mean to. Brother Henderson continued to do that. And he was a little more careful about how he held it. And I was a little more careful about how I hit it. And sometimes when you work together, you may be offended. And you may offend. But how good and pleasant it is when we can forgive. When we can work together in unity. And I believe that can happen in our churches. I believe that can happen with U.S. maps and RV maps. And I've seen it constantly as these teams work together, that they definitely work together in unity and honor and obey God in that. Nehemiah, I want to share from the book of Nehemiah this morning. And if you have your Bibles, you can turn there. I believe I have the scriptures on the slides as well for you. But Nehemiah is a man who was a builder, and he worked together with teams of people helping to build the walls of Jerusalem and rebuild the walls of Jerusalem. Nehemiah is a man, and I would say he is a man of prayer and of action. He was a man of prayer, and we're going to look at some of his prayers in the book of Nehemiah. And he was also a man of action, because after he prayed, he took action upon what God shared with him in those prayers to do. Prayer and action, it's a two-sided coin. And when you have a coin, whether it's a quarter or a 50-cent piece, that value of it is depending on what's stamped on both sides of it. And I want you to think of Nehemiah as a man of prayer and action, that it has a coin with two sides stamped. It doesn't have the value if only one side is stamped or only the back side. And it, yes, don't discount the power of prayer, but I believe that when you combine the power of prayer with the power of action, when you put action to the prayers that God has put in your heart and birthed in your heart when you've prayed, that there's a value to that. And so there's a coin that we can spend, there's a coin that we can invest when we pray and when we act upon what God has called us to do and what he's putting in our hearts to do. Nehemiah was a man of prayer and a man of action. Every time you take a coin out of your pocket or out of your purse, if you use a coin anymore, if you don't just use a credit card or a debit card or a swipe or whatever it is, but when you touch a coin, I want you to think of prayer and action. And remember that God is there to help you turn your prayers into action as well. Nehemiah chapter 1 and verse 3, Nehemiah is asking about his homeland. He had been taken away in exile, and he was asking about what are things like back home. And there's times I've been gone from Casper for years, and I call on it, what are things like back home? And you care about what's happening back home and with your family and with your friends. And Nehemiah was no different. He called and he said, what's happening back home? And here's the report. It says, those who survived the exile and are back in the province are in great trouble and disgrace, and the wall of Jerusalem is broken down and its gates have been burned with fire. That's not the news that you want to hear from back home. The news back home is not good. It's disgraceful. The walls are broken down. It's a disgrace. The gates have been burned with fire. And even though people have survived, even though they've survived and they've been brought back from the exile, they are in disgrace and trouble. I don't know what trouble you're facing. What disgrace you may be facing. There may be disgrace in your home. It may be disgrace in your own life. There may be trouble in your own home or in your family or in your community, in our nation. We look at our nation as a whole and we say, how have we gotten to where we're at? How have we gotten to where the walls are broken down and the gates are broken down? And what can we do to rebuild the standards in our nation that need to be rebuilt? Perhaps you're facing some things in your life or your workplace or your home or your nation. And Nehemiah, that was the report from back home. Here's his response in verse 4. He says, when I heard these things, I sat down and I wept for some days and I mourned and I fasted and prayed before the God of heaven. It was so overwhelming to him when he heard what had taken place back home. It says he sat down and for days he wept and he mourned and he fasted and he prayed. It moved him so deeply. When was the last time that there's been something in our lives, somebody's condition that we've been praying for that has moved us to the point of tears, or moved us to the point where we want to see something happen, where we've prayed and we've fasted and we've mourned maybe for several days, and it just wakes us at night and it disturbs our sleep and it constantly in our thoughts because we care about other people and we care about our home. Nehemiah fasted and prayed for several days. And this is probably his longest prayer in chapter 1, verse 4, and on through there. I'm not going to read that prayer this morning, but as you continue on through this, you see the promise of Nehemiah in chapter 1 and verse 9. It says, if you return to me, if you return to me and obey my commands, then even if your exiled people are at the farthest horizon, I will gather them from there and bring them to the place I have chosen as a dwelling place for my name. We see the report. We see his response. And now we see the promise of God. If you return to me, after you've seen the report and heard the report and you are weeping and mourning and fasting and praying, here's the promise and don't forget it. He says, from the farthest horizon, I will bring my people home if they will return to me. Now, how far is that farthest horizon? When you drive across these big open stretches in Wyoming and across the flatlands of Nebraska, you're driving down the interstate and you see horizon. And when you get to that horizon, what do you see? You see another horizon. And when you get to it, what's beyond that? Another horizon. Now, how far is the farthest horizon then? How far do you have to go to get to the farthest horizon? How far away is the farthest horizon? You know what the promise is? It says he will bring them back from the farthest. Do you know some people who have strayed a long ways away? Do you know some people who have drifted way off course and have gone beyond several horizons, maybe to the farthest. Do you know some people, perhaps you've given up hope on them? But I want to share with you the promise this morning that if they will return, if you will pray and fast and mourn, if you will do what you can and God will do what he can, if they will return and obey his commands, he will bring them from the farthest horizon. What that tells me, it doesn't matter how far people have gone, how bad things have become, that if they will turn to God, he will bring them home and restore their life and rebuild their lives. Maybe you've drifted a few horizons away. Maybe you're not too far out of sight and you're just at the first horizon. And I want you to hear God's voice speaking to you today and saying, come back, come back. Draw near to me and I'll draw nigh to you. If you return to God, he is able to restore you. Chapter 2 of Nehemiah, we see the opportunity that lies before Nehemiah after he's been praying, he's been fasting, he's been grieving over his people and asking, God's been stirring something in his heart. And then in chapter 2, verse 4 and 5, Nehemiah comes before the king, and he's the cupbearer of the king, which is a strategic thing because the cupbearer is important to the king. There's got to be a good relationship with the cupbearer and the king. He's got to trust that man because he's the man that tastes the drinks and tastes everything that the king is going to put to his lips to make sure that there's not poisoned and that it tastes well and that it's to the quality that the king needs. Nehemiah was the cupbearer of the king, and on this day, after he's been grieving and mourning for his people, he goes back to work, and the king notices that something isn't quite right with Nehemiah. He says, Nehemiah, why are you so downcast? There's a heaviness on you. Just all I can describe it as is the king knew him well enough that there was a heaviness in Nehemiah's heart. And he was very much afraid. But I said to the king, may the king live forever. Why should my face not look like this? When the city where my fathers are buried lie in ruins, its gates have been destroyed by fire. And then the king said to me, and here's the opportunity. The king said to me, what is it that you want? What is it that you want? Nehemiah, what is it that would lift this burden? What would lift this heaviness? What is it that you want? And I want you to take a step back with me. It's not necessarily the king of Babylon or Artaxerxes speaking to us, but I want you to hear it from God's heart to you as an individual. When you've prayed and you've fasted and you've mourned for people, I want you to hear the king say to you, what is it you want? You've seen the hurt. You've seen the despair. What is it you want? This was an opportunity in Nehemiah, a man of prayer and a man of action, reached in his pocket for that coin, and he invested it. He said, here's what I want, King. I want to go back and I want to rebuild the walls. I want to restore the walls and rebuild the gates of my homeland. And here's what I need. The king said, what do you need? How long is it going to take? Nehemiah was ready and prepared. You see, God had been birthing something in his heart already. And he was prepared with an answer to the king. And he said, here's what I need. I've got a purchase order already filled out. I need timbers from the hills, and I need this and that. And if you'll sign the purchase order, that's one of the things I need. And then I need guards to go with me. I need people to travel with me so that I get there safely. And I need an amount of time to do this. And the king granted it. The king granted it. Nehemiah was ready. He had been praying. He had invested his life, and he told the king what he needed and when he needed it and how long he would be. That was the vision that was birthed in Nehemiah. He wanted to see something happen, and when the opportunity arose, he was ready to take advantage of it. God will give you opportunities. Sometimes you don't know when they're coming or where they're coming from. But God will give you opportunities to put into action some things that you've been praying about. Nehemiah chapter 2, verse 12. As Nehemiah travels to Jerusalem, if you know the story, he travels to Jerusalem and he goes out at night and goes around the walls of Jerusalem just to assess what needs to happen out there and what's taking place. And it says, I set out during the night with a few men in Nehemiah chapter 2, verse 12, and I had not told anyone what God had put in my heart. At this point, it was still burning in his soul. He had not told anyone what God had put in his heart to do for Jerusalem. And he goes around the walls of Jerusalem and he assesses what needs to happen there. And then he goes to the officials. He says in verse 16, the officials did not know where I had gone or what I was doing because as of yet, I had said nothing to the Jews or the priests or the nobles or the officials or others who would be doing the work. And then I said to them in verse 17, then I said to them, you see the trouble we are in. Well, no duh, Nehemiah. These are the exiles. They've been living in the trouble. They've seen the trouble. In fact, it was probably the conversation at every coffee shop. I'll guarantee that as they sat in the coffee shops talking, they talked about the problems. They talked about the walls that were broken down and the gates that were burned with fire, and somebody should do something about it. And Nehemiah says the obvious. You see the trouble that we have. And then he invites them to join him in the vision. Come and let's rebuild the walls. I don't know that anybody else to that point had offered that to them. But it was an invitation. Come and build the walls. Let us rebuild the walls. And they replied in verse 18, let us start rebuilding. So they began this good work. Vision was birthed in his heart and held in his heart until the fullness of time. He waited until the right opportunity to reveal to others. The vision must be revealed, but it has to be revealed. It has to be released. A vision that is just birthed in the soul will eat you up until you have an opportunity to reveal it. And Nehemiah, when that vision, he had that opportunity, he revealed it. And they began the work. Nehemiah chapter 4, I want to jump ahead a little bit here. Nehemiah chapter 4. How many of you know that when you start out to do something right, sometimes people don't like what you're doing? They might oppose it. They may not agree. They may not get on board. And here in chapter 4, verse 7 and 8, we see Sanballat and Tobiah. Everybody say Sanballat and Tobiah. They're key players here. I want you to remember them. Sanballat and Tobiah, the Arabs, the Ammonites, the men of Ashdod, heard that the repairs to Jerusalem's walls had gone ahead and that the gaps were being closed. And they were, my version says, they were angry. They were angry. They were intensely angry. In fact, verse 8, they all plotted together to come and fight against Jerusalem and to stir up trouble against it. They came to fight against Jerusalem and to stir up trouble. There was opposition. Now, I was an EMT while I was pastoring. I pastored in Baird, Nebraska for 9 years, and I was an EMT during most of those years. And one of the things they drilled into us as EMTs when we went through our training was scene safety. When you show up on the scene as an EMT, if the scene isn't safe, you don't do anything. Because if the scene isn't safe and you try to do something, you might be the next patient. The scene wasn't safe. For Nehemiah, when he began to assess and they began the work of the walls, the scene wasn't safe. They had some people who were angry and wanted to stop and wanted to stir up trouble and wanted to attack them and wanted to do everything but let the work continue. And so the scene wasn't safe. But here's what they did. Here's what they did to make the scene safe. They assessed the danger and they realized it wasn't safe. And in verse 9, it says, but we prayed to our God and posted a guard night and day to meet that threat. We prayed and we took action. We realized it was a dangerous thing we were getting into, but we took action. Now, I grew up in Casper, and where we lived out on Allendale, it was about a mile and a half to Grant School, where I went to elementary school. And it was an easy trip. On the bus in the morning, we were down out towards the end of the stop, and the bus would pick us up and quick, you know, a few stops down, and it was a quick trip to school in the morning. But in the evenings, it was a little different story because the bus would pick you up, and then it would go across town to the junior high school, and then it'd go across town to Kelly Walsh and pick up students, and it could be an hour and a half till you get home. Well, it's just a mile and a half home, and you can walk a mile and a half a lot faster than that. So a lot of times we walked, And most of the time, the wind was blowing. And sometimes it was a headwind, and sometimes it was a tailwind. But guaranteed, most of the time, the wind was blowing, and it was uphill both ways. And there was also downhill both ways, because you kind of go up from Grand Hill, up Oak Street, about a half a mile, and there's a water tower or water tank up there on the crest of the hill. And it was a nice walk up there, and then you get to over the crest of that hill, and you could look that mile to where the house. You couldn't see the house, but you could see where the house was. And then you'd come down this nice, gentle slope just before there's a flat spot. Now, they've run McKinley Street through that and messed that all up, but just ignore that. But kind of a nice flat spot through there, then a nice little gentle walk on up home. But when you come down the hill just before where McKinley is now, that, as a grade school kid, was the Valley of Shadow and Death. And the reason is that as you get down close that way, on the right side of the road was a junkyard. It wasn't a big junkyard, covered about a city block, but there was a junkyard. And you know what junkyards have? Junkyard dogs. They have junkyard dogs. And a lot of times it was behind the fence, and sometimes it was in the house, and it was tearing the door apart trying to get out. And I would walk down that road, didn't have a sidewalk on, but I'd kind of move over to the other side of the road and try to walk as carefully as I could, not to turn any pebbles, and hoping the wind was in the right direction so that dog wouldn't smell me, and just in fear of that big German Shepherd. And sometimes that dog was out on the porch, and it would come out to greet me. And it was, you know, you got a German Shepherd that's this tall and an elementary kid that isn't much taller, and it was frightening. Well, that was all fine and good, except on the other side of the road lived a Chihuahua. And you know how Chihuahuas are. And Chihuahuas like to nip at your heels and grab your pant legs and jump and bite your fingers. And so I don't know how many times I kind of ran down that straight stretch with a little Chihuahua chasing me and tears running down my cheeks. It's, you know, it was always glad when a neighbor, we lived in a little different era, and sometimes neighbors would stop and pick you up and it was okay. But that for me was the Valley of Shadow, the German Shepherd, and Death, the Chihuahua. And I want you to understand, this is kind of where Nehemiah was as he's building the walls. He's got a dog on one side barking at him, Sanballat and Tobiah, a little Chihuahua and a German Shepherd, and they're threatening him and keeping him and distracting him. And he's got a path that he needs to take, a way that he needs to get home. And they're barking at him and yelling at him and threatening him. But they prayed and posted a guard. Oh, I wish I could have had a guard in those days. I was doing a lot of praying. The threat was disabled. In verse 16 of chapter 4, it says, "From that day on, half of my men did the work, while the other half were equipped with spears." And I don't want you to miss this. Sometimes the working conditions are not ideal, and you can still get the job done. Sometimes, I think you've heard a sermon recently about chasing a lion into a pit on a snowy day. Sometimes the weather just isn't quite right, but you can still get the job done. Nehemiah chapter 9, I'm sorry, chapter 4, we prayed and we posted a guard. And then in 16, half did the work, half guarded the work. And those who carried materials did their work with one hand and held a weapon in the other hand. They refused to let the danger endanger the work. They prayed and they posted a guard, and they were prepared to neutralize the danger. They equipped the workers. And I read this and I say, how in the world could they get anything done? How could they get anything done when they're working with one hand? And they're holding a weapon. They've got a hammer in one hand and a sword in the other, or a shield in the other. They've got a trowel in one, whatever their tool was they were using. They were working with one hand, and they've got a sword on their side or something else to protect them. And then it dawned on me, we kind of see people doing that every day. They're working with one hand. They own one of these, and they're trying to get their work done with one hand, aren't they? It's not a new thing. But they were doing it with a purpose, and they got the. And here's what's incredible is that even though they were working with one hand, they still got the job done. and God gave them favor. Then we move on a little bit further into Nehemiah chapter 6 and verse 9. It says they were trying to frighten us. They were continuing with the building of the walls, and they were trying to frighten us, thinking their hands will get too tired, too weak for the work, and it will not be completed. But I prayed, God, strengthen my hands. In the New Testament, it says, be not weary in well-doing, for in due season you will reap if you faint not. Have you ever been weary? And I believe that Satan would like to divert the work of God, and many times ministries have started and they've gone strong and they've faced oppositions, they've faced down the Tobiases and the Sanballats, and they've made it through the valley of the shadow of death, and they are weary. And Nehemiah and his crews were weary because they were working with one hand and they were living with the fear of attack over the backside of them, and they were weary, and they said, God, strengthen my hands. Be not weary in well-doing, for in due season you will reap if you faint not. There's times when you are doing the work of God that you get weary. I want to encourage you today, don't give up. Some of you have been praying for family members for years. Some of you have been praying for your community, and some of you have been praying for a neighbor and people at work and for this nation for years. Do not become weary in well-doing, for in due season you will reap if you faint not. And it's chapter 6 and verse 15, it says, so the wall was completed in 52 days. With one, it didn't say this, but with one hand. Or you could say with one hand tied behind their back. It's what God can do, because it wasn't just the people working, it was God working with them. Unless the Lord builds the house, they labor in vain who try at all to do anything. God was with them. And they were able to accomplish the work of God with the help of God, and they honored him. I want you to have confidence as you set out to do God's work that he will be with you. He will help you face down the naysayers, that he will help you, give you strength to complete. U.S. missions is not just about building churches. It's about building something that is eternal in the hearts and lives of people. Walls that have been broken down need to be rebuilt. People need to be able to stand and defend their faith. And it's more than just buildings. It's about a place where we can meet together and worship God, but also a place we can work out of and meet people. I want to take you back to that roof on Alliance. During one of those breaks, I sat on that roof and sat thinking, meditating, praying. And in that conversation between God and I had been called into ministry, and if most of you know me and my family, I'm the quiet one of the bunch. God has a sense of humor when he called me into ministry, but that's a whole other story. But I sat on that roof, and I said, if there was a way for me to do this with the rest of my life, I'd be happy. If there were a way for me to build churches, I would be honored to do that. Is if God was whispering in my heart, Dan, what is it that you want? And I was having that conversation with him. God, I would love to build churches. 40 years ago, that was placed in my heart. And it's just recently in this past year that God has tapped me on the shoulder and said, it's time for a dream to come to fruition. It's time for you to do something you always wanted and would love to do. U.S. missions for me is an investment of my life into the heartbeat of what God's heart is to reach people for the gospel. And I want to invite you to join me. I want to invite you to believe God and to trust God for things that you haven't believed him for. Maybe there's something in your heart that he's placed there years ago that you've forgotten about. And I pray right now that God, by his Spirit, would rebirth it and restore it and remind you of something that he spoke to you that maybe you've even forgotten about. Because I believe that God is a giver of dreams, and he places within us the desires. And he will give you opportunity. That's my message. He will give you opportunity to live out that dream and to follow him.
You have been listening to the podcast of Casper Faith Assembly in Casper, Wyoming. For more information, please email us, casperfaith@gmail.com, or call us at 307-365-9121. We hope you've enjoyed this presentation of Casper Faith Assembly, where relationships matter most.